The Jenny Mathis Show continues next.
Our ongoing conversation on Common Core and what it means for you continues.
I just don't know where this is coming from.
The state superintendent of schools, Dr. Lowerly, dismisses concerns over Maryland's massive data mining program known as the Longitudinal Data System.
The student databases that we have are the student databases that we've always had.
But that's not accurate. Recent pieces of legislation widen the net on what information is being captured and how secure is this information.
We are looking at attendance patterns. We're looking at discipline patterns. We're looking at students who are eligible for free and reduced meals.
State Senator Paul Pinsky was the co-sponsor on several of these bills, and he joins me next. People that do have a concern about privacy issues with this, what would be your word to them? What would be your guarantee that they have nothing to be concerned about?
I'm not giving any guarantees.
Join the conversation, 410-467-WBAL, or toll free from anywhere in America, 1-800-767-WBAL. The Jenny Mathis Show on WBAL continues now.
Welcome back to the program. We are right now joined by State Senator Paul Pinsky. We've been spending the last couple of weeks talking about Common Core and specifically the longitudinal data system. Senator, thank you very much for taking time to join me this morning. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
A lot of people, as we've sort of been diving into this Common Core issue, the longitudinal data system really goes back to 2009 when Maryland submitted their original application for the Race to the Top funds, correct?
Yes.
If you could just sort of explain to people exactly what information is being gathered, what happens to it. As I've been talking to people on the air about this, there seems to be sort of a lack of knowledge, I guess, when it comes to parents, to Marylanders, on exactly what information is being gathered, why it's being gathered, and what happens with this information. I know that you've been instrumental in different pieces of legislation when it comes into this, so that's why I wanted to talk to you and help people get a better understanding of what this data system is all about.
Well, let me start with the why.
Yeah.
And the reason is, you know, the state, which means taxpayers, spend a lot of money on education, K-12 education, higher education. And I think the idea behind the longitudinal data system is to see whether we were getting our money's worth. So, you know, if taxpayers and the state have such a big investment in education, is it being successful? If not, why not? And can we track it to where we have the breakdowns? And I think that's the idea behind this. And look, does the federal government think it's a good idea? Yeah. Are they spending some money? Yes. So I think it's a question of accountability. And so it longitudinal, it's to follow public school education, kindergarten through 12th, mm-hmm. and then community college and higher education for a year, and then for a few years in the workforce. And I'll explain that. If, for example, we can find out that large numbers of children going to a two-year or four-year are either very successful or unsuccessful, using this data, we can work backwards to see what high schools are preparing kids well and which aren't. So we can put more of a microscope on to say, look, this school is not preparing kids, whether it be for University of Maryland College Park or Hopkins or Baltimore Community College. And it gives you a chance to work in that direction and target a county. I mean, because it's mostly aggregate data. This is not for individualized purposes. It's a look at trends. And also, if students are leaving colleges, it does track their employment for 4 or 5 years. Are they making an income? Are they working?
Right.
And because if, in fact, they're taking the wrong classes and can't get a job, or else they're going to a community college or four-year college and they're not being prepared for employment, we need to know that, because then we have to put the microscope under those institutions and say, look, either you have a mismatch in terms of what you're teaching kids opposed to what's out there in terms of jobs, or maybe you're not doing a great job teaching kids. So without any data, it's all on assumptions, you know, and some people say, well, we're spending too much money. You're raising taxes. Well, I think most people believe if we're going to spend the money, make the investment, we ought to know what it's producing. So I think the idea behind this is to use it to back map and work backwards you know, is there a problem at middle school? Is it a problem at elementary
right.
school? If so, is it this county? Is it that county? Is it poor kids? Is it rich kids? And if you look at the aggregate data and we can make some lessons or take some lessons from it, maybe we can do better in the future in the different levels of education.
But just to back out of this, because 45 states in the country, including the District of Columbia, took the Race to the Top funds, this was part of what the federal government wanted as a requirement for us to receive those funds. This really was, I understand it went through the legislative process at the local level, but this really was mandated by the federal government, correct?
Well, look, if you want to Race to the Top funds, and I have to tell you, personally, I'm not enamored of the Race to the Top. I think it had some serious pitfalls in it, okay?
Right.
And Maryland chose to do it. A couple counties actually said no thank you. Frederick County, Montgomery County said no thank you. Some people went in one direction, went into another. I think conceptually of encouraging creative and innovative reforms is a good idea. I think there were other aspects, not the LDS, not the longitudinal data system, where I think the federal government was, in fact, trying to push some things. I personally have some concerns with evaluating teachers based on student test scores. I think...
Well, I have a problem with that, too. I also have a problem, and again, keep in mind, this legislation dates back to 2009. We weren't talking about PRISM and the Verizon story. I mean, that's all recent stuff. But I'm looking here at the application for a Race to the Top, which is where originally this data mining program was initiated. And you look at who has access to this information. And again, this is referring to the application, quote-unquote, key stakeholders, which are defined as parents, students, teachers, local education authorities, community members, unions, researchers, policymakers.
Oh, no.
I mean. Basically, it seems like pretty much
none of those people have that.
But that's actually in the application. I mean, that's what we sent for the Race to the Top funds.
All I can tell you is about the legislation we passed that actually defined all of this. I had the bill here a moment ago. I don't have it right.
I believe it was 240. Senate Bill 245. Was that the original one?
It may have been.
I'm sorry. Senate Bill 275 was the original one.
Okay, yeah, 275, that's exactly right. And in it, it's very explicit that, first of all, it has to include de-identified data.
Right.
So it doesn't have individual-level identity information, and any reports are aggregate reports, and only some people can get it. Actually, even people who work in the center doing with the data, they are limited in their access to individual data. So it's scrubbed pretty clean. And again, I don't think the idea was to track Mary Smith or Joe Brown as to what his grades were in 11th grade. I mean,
That wasn't the intention. But I look, we talk about what went through in the original bill in Senate Bill 245 back in 2009. Now you look at this last legislative session, which I believe that you were actually a sponsor on, Senate Bill 945. This now is adding universities that accept taxpayer funds that they need to make financial information available for this data system. I guess it's like anything, Senator, yes, go ahead, I'm sorry.
That was only for the private nonprofit universities to include them to contribute some of the data that the public universities that get much more significant funding. I mean, the private nonprofits get a little bit of money. I mean,
right.
It's not. And so this was just to include them as well. This did not change the primary aspect. And in fact, I mean, the state of Maryland had looked at its own longitudinal thing prior to the Fed saying, you ought to have a more complete longitudinal data system, as you mentioned, was included in the Race to the Top application and encouraged people to do that. But, there's actually federal legislation, it's the FERPA, Family Educational Rights and Privacy.
Correct.
That has very clear privacy laws and policies that can't be abridged. And in fact,
but with all due respect, sir, they can. I mean, this basically circumvents, that piece of legislation that you're talking about.
It actually goes beyond. I mean, this has higher standards. It can't even, any individual data that it wants to include has to be sent to the governor and the whole legislature. So once it goes to 188 people in the legislature, we know they can share saying, look, I think this is wrong, and there can be a public debate, and it gets out. But, I mean, if we're talking about grades, we're talking about...
We're talking about financial information, and we're talking about grades, And I don't want to be the ultimate pessimist here, and everything is the camel's nose under the tent, if you will.
Right.
But again, looking at the last 4 years of this, the original bill, SB 245, you get in what's going to be, I don't mean you individually, I'm just saying the way policy works in general, you get the legislation through that's going to be palatable at that time, and then you sort of, chip away death by a thousand cuts. You look at Senate Bill 945. Is this piece of legislation by itself a big deal? No, but you start adding up what is being included in this data mining program right now, and I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of debate that Marylanders were aware of, not just on the longitudinal data system, Common Core in general, sir. I went to a Board of Education meeting up in Harford County last week. It was a roundtable where the Board of Education was trying to inform policymakers on, what was coming down the pike during the next school year here with Common Core. And just the lack of knowledge that people had about this was frightening. And as I've been covering this the last couple of weeks, the limited amount of information that's available to parents, whether we're talking about the curriculum, we're talking about how this is going to be implemented, we're talking about the longitudinal data system, it just seems like there is a real void of information out there for what is really a complete transformation of the way education is run in this country.
Well, let me respond two ways.
Yes.
First, with the longitudinal data system, the bill that dealt with most of the policy of constructing this system was, as you said, Senate Bill 275 in the 2010 session.
Yes.
And there was a large amount of debate. There was a lot amount of debate as to what is appropriate in terms of what should be included and to access to it. And we tried to put in, and again, these were Democrats and Republicans who all debated this, of what is the best way with the interest of having some accountability to improve our school system, but also protect people's individual rights and not let individual identified information out there. And, it's always a fine line. And we can say, let's not have any data, but then we can have school systems or schools or higher education institutions go off the tracks and do a terrible job, and someone says, how did it get this way? So,
sure.
You have to balance accountability with, collecting some data. And I think that it's based on aggregate data and individuals are de-identified, and it's very limited access. If there are state reports, they're public reports. So if someone says, whoa, this is too far afield, they can raise a hand and say, this is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the Common Core, I speak to a lot of teachers in multiple counties. And while it's adding a lot of work in the transition to a person, they're all saying, I think this is the right way to go. It's deeper. It's pushing kids to analyze, to be better students. It's moving away from the rote kind of learn the curriculum and move on, and that it's a deeper understanding, and they feel that the kids are going to, young people are going to be more successful in the future. I guess I don't see a whole lot of, and again, it was voluntary. Every state superintendent and governor had to sign on. It didn't happen. The federal government said you had to do this. People can say thanks, but no thanks. And some states have. I think Texas is one of them.
It was voluntary. But just to be clear on that point, this is coming out of the 2008 financial crisis. States across the country were strapped for cash and hurting. So correct. I mean, there wasn't a gun being held to our heads, but it was. If you want the money, then you're going to have to do X, Y, and Z, and X was the longitudinal data system, and the other thing was sign on to a curriculum that the majority of the state signed on, and then hence how this sort of morphed into Common Core.
Right, but the National Governors Association, which is made up of governors of 50 states, said most of them, I can't speak for all of them,
sure.
I don't speak for any of them, actually, said they were hearing that curriculum was not rigorous enough.
Yeah, vigor, rigorous, focused.
Yeah, we're not challenged enough. And enough reports that said, we're falling behind, we're not expecting as much, kids are not understanding the analytical skills. They might memorize some facts, but they weren't getting the underpinning. And more people in the private sector were saying, look, we're not enough problem solvers. They can't read... what do you call them?
Instructional text.
Yeah, and analyzing stuff. I mean, we're not talking fiction, we're talking nonfiction here. They can all read fictional books, but can they read the text to go along with their job? And they weren't. And I think that was also what drove the Common Core standards were to address those needs from the private sector, from the Education Task Force. And I think enough governors said, you know what, we're hearing the same thing. And enough of them said, yes, so are we, that they moved in this direction. And
but just from a rhetoric standpoint, you know, what we hear in the state of Maryland is Maryland number one in education 5 years in a row. And I guess we can't play both sides of the plate simultaneously. Either we're leading the nation when it comes to education, or we're not. There's a massive problem, and we need to fix it. Again, that's one of the that's one of the questions I'm hearing from parents all the time as well.
I think that's a fair question, and I think some of these assessments where we're number one are somewhat subjective. I mean, you can graduate kids; it doesn't mean they're graduating with the skills.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's why I'm not very big on high-stakes testing, but coming from Prince George's County, having taught there for 20 years, I might have a teacher colleague who I thought was being too easy, and kids would pass with an A or a B, and I knew they could barely get 400 on the SAT.
Right.
So, you know, being too tough can be hard, but being too easy can also mislead kids. So I think you need some kind of assessments to be apples to apples, so you know if your standards are the same across the board. I don't know if we're number one. You know, in Prince George's County, we have a long way to go. We have some very successful schools and some that are failing. You know, are we getting enough people to be principals and teachers? No, there's a shortage. People are not going into the field. We got to figure out how to do that. And where are they able to attract teachers and principals and not? So I think
But don't you think part of that, sir, is because of – look, I'm like you. I have a lot of friends that are in the teaching profession. And
right.
I think, unfortunately, a lot of the teachers take the brunt of the criticism where that is not fairly allocated.
I really agree on that one. Absolutely.
You're not getting into that for the paycheck. That is a
right.
calling, and I can't tell you how many teachers I personally know that write checks out of their personal accounts for
yep.
supplies and what have you. Which is why the real question when it comes to the money in education isn't that we need more of it. It's where is it going? We have what 40%, I believe, of almost the entire Maryland state budget goes to education, K through 12. I think one of the reasons that we're not seeing more professionals wanting to get into the teaching profession is because of all the bureaucracy and red tape and the inability to really educate and have the freedom to do that. So while I'm not questioning the intentions of Common Core or any of what we've been talking about, I'm wondering if it may unintentionally have an adverse effect on what we're really trying to do here.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. But as I've talked to people who've been implementing the new Common Core curriculum, the old curriculum was very kind of, you know, if you're on Tuesday, you should be doing X.
Right.
And it was very kind of very directed. And in some ways, this Common Core says this is the mastery objective. You want them at the end of this unit to be able to do this, analyze this, know why they're doing it. And they actually have more flexibility, which in fact is taking a lot more time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less script and less scripted than the old curriculum. So I think, again, with teachers making a transition, it's a lot of work. I think once it's in place, I think they're going to feel a little bit freed up to have a little more flexibility, which they used to have. And again, maybe the jury's still out on that one.
Right.
I just don't think this is getting in the way. It's been more a time of learning a new approach. That's really the thing that I'm hearing from teachers. And look, we want to improve the school system. They want to be treated like professionals.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we want them to have flexibility. We also want to be able to assess that kids are learning and that in school system A and school system B, we have the same expectations. We don't want to have higher expectations in one county and lower in another. You know, we don't want to applaud people for graduation if they don't have basic skills, because then the kids fail when they get into the work world.
I guess just in closing, Senator, back to the longitudinal data system, in the wake of PRISM, the Verizon story, people that do have a concern about privacy issues with this, what would be your word to them? What would be your guarantee that they have nothing to be concerned about on it?
I'm not giving any guarantees. I'm one legislator of 188. I vote for this stuff like all my colleagues. I think there, as I understand it, there are enough protections that there no individual data will get out anywhere. And there's enough of a reason to try to improve our schools and our investment in our schools that we need some kind of data accumulation to improve people's investment.
Senator Paul Pinsky, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Quick break. Taking your phone calls on the other side. 410-467-WBAL. Be right back.